You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, Hoops heads. Welcome to Locked On Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. It's Wednesday, February 21st. I'm your host, Aliko Carter. Pretty long pod today. We've got Sergen Kumas from Trend Basket here to talk all things All-Star Break, as well as his Sixers, the Golden State Warriors, and a few other stories around the NBA. Serge knows the game, and it was a great conversation, so I hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the show, Sergen.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Happy to have you here. And we wanted to start with a wide-ranging conversation about the NBA All-Star break, because it was pretty entertaining. We'll start with the game itself. What did you think of the game, the new format and everything like that?
I mean, I thought it was great. You know, I think for each NBA fan, right? So you missed seeing Kyrie with LeBron. Despite how, you know, what happened, he went on first take with Max Kellerman and kind of some shots at LeBron. But I think you seeing LeBron and Kyrie, you seeing Russ and KD kind of rekindle their friendship. I mean, before basketball players, they're, of course, friends playing on the same team. Two, 3 seasons ago, you had Kyrie and LeBron win the finals, and you had KD and Russ, you know, solidifying what OKC was back in 2012, 2013, 2014, and going from there. So I thought it was good in that aspect. And also, you never really see Eastern Conference players in All-Star games past. You never saw Eastern Conference players matching up or mixing up with Western Conference players and vice versa. So I thought that was quite interesting. And the chemistry was there. I mean, these guys don't play with each other on a daily basis. You know, KD and Russ and Kyrie and LeBron had that chemistry because they did play together. But I just thought it was a great format overall. And I'm excited when Commissioner Adam Silver said that next year they might televise the draft. That just makes it more exciting, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I was able to have a short conversation with LaMarcus Aldridge over the weekend, and he was on Dame's opposite team, but I thought that would have been cool to have them play on the same team as well. But them being on opposite teams and both being in the Western Conference actually made it more interesting. But he said that him and Dame are on very good terms, and it seems like the brotherhood of the NBA was very strong throughout the weekend.
Exactly. I think for the fans, that was good. You know, I think last year in the 2017 All-Star game, you had that one pass where Russell threw KD and alley-oop. And after the game, reporters were like, what was that all about? And it was like, well, that's basketball, you know, nothing more than that. But I think in this All-Star game, you saw that those images, I think, posted by SportsCenter, if not by other reporters on via Twitter, via social media, that KD and Russ were talking in the locker room. And you saw all those videos, all those GIFs or clips or whatnot of LeBron and Kyrie laughing on the bench. I think as the fans saw that, they saw that, wow, you know, these guys, they don't hold grudges. They're not bitter about what happened with the trade, so on and so forth. So I think seeing that brotherhood throughout the NBA and throughout this All-Star game is what the fans were looking for, and they got it. So,
yeah, absolutely. I was able to be at the Rising Stars game, and I know that your two guys, especially Ben Simmons, because he was a little salty about not getting an injury replacement choice to go to the All-Star game that went to Kemba Walker. The final injury replacement went to Kemba Walker.
Right.
And the world team just dominated, just like through and through. It was a competitive game, but it really felt like the world came out to play and the USA was just kind of like playing backyard basketball.
I mean, I don't think so, too. I mean, when you're looking at the world team, there's just, I think one comparison you can make of this is when they had the Summit Challenge. I'm not quite sure word for word, but I think what they had was they would have the high school prospects play world prospects. And I think that was kind of similar to this format where you have, instead of high school prospects, you have NBA players, so to speak. So I think seeing what the world had to offer, you know, with the Australians with, you know, rooting for Ben Simmons, you had Bogdan Bogdanovic, also, you know, him. He's a 25-year-old rookie. You know, he's got like, you know, 2 or 3 years on the rest of the rookies for the most part, if not more. Had 26 points, 7 of 13 start from downtown. And so he played great. He got the MVP, but more so on the Sixers. Simmons had a double-double, you know, 11 points, 13 rebounds. Dario scoring double figures as well. And I think seeing those guys flourish, you know, Embiid didn't play a whole lot. Makes sense because he was in the All-Star game 2 nights later. And the next night he was in an event, the All-Skills Challenge, sorry. And so I think seeing the Sixers, and I think it was strange because it's also fun to watch that you had Dario representing Croatia, you had Embiid with Cameroon, and you had Ben Simmons representing Australia, and all of them were on the world team. And so they all of them have chemistry, all of them are starters for the Sixers for this season, for the majority of the season. And I think that helped the world win 155-124.
Yeah, absolutely. And so question about Embiid and about the bigs in the All-Star Skills Challenge. Did they cheat? What are your thoughts on their the play? Because I didn't watch it until afterwards. The Skills Challenge is not my favorite thing, but there was some hubbub over the Bigs, you know, cheating. So I wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
I mean, to be quite honest, I think the Skills Challenge as a whole, I just don't like the way it is now. Sure, you know, the fans are more into it now. I think you have Bigs, you know, how you had marketing representing Finland, the Porters, and you had Joel Embiid with the Sixers and everything. So I thought that was quite interesting when they get more big players now, power forwards, centers, and everything. But with regards to cheating, yeah, I mean, I didn't notice it until after, you know, when social media started retweeting, people started retweeting it, started liking it over social media, and I was like, whoa, like, and he actually came down and actually got a shot off. So to think that if he actually came down the full length of the court and hit that shot, I mean, like, what would have happened, right? I think that was, would they have gone to replay? I mean, I don't know. I'm pretty sure the NBA, being the way it is, being a respected league here in the U.S., North America, I just think it would have gone to replay. But, I mean, you know, Joel's Joel. He's a troll for the most part. I love him. You know, who doesn't?
Yeah, he is. He's the greatest troll.
I love him. In real life and on social media, on both ends. So I think it's great.
Trust the process. But I agree with you about the Skills Challenge. They did get rid of that the only event that really kind of like integrated the WNBA into the event, that kind of shooting stars thing that they used to do, where they would do a layup, a free throw, three pointer, and then the half court shot. And that would get old really quickly when people couldn't make the half court shot. But I thought that it was still sometimes more exciting than the Skills Challenge, because nobody really tries that hard in the Skills Challenge, and the skills that they're showcasing aren't exactly like crazy NBA skills. It'd be something else if we had like Steph Curry versus Kyrie out there on a ball handling Skills Challenge or whatever. But you got Bigs, you got Smalls, and the marquee names aren't necessarily even there. So you're not excited, except for Joel Embiid, who was the biggest name on the roster that year. I mean, last year you had, DeMarcus Cousins, a few other people, Kristaps Porzingis, who couldn't play this year. Neither of those guys could be in it this year. But it's just not a great event. I think they need to do something to either jazz it up to get more people involved, or maybe bring back shooting stars and get rid of the Skills Challenge. Or, you know, it's just, you know, people come and they watch All-Star Saturday Night for the dunk contest and for the three-point contest. So we'll get right to that. What'd you think of the three-point contest first, and then we'll get to the dunk contest?
Well, you know, I think, Aliko, from my perspective, I've always been, an admirer of shooters, guys who just, you know, just straight up shoot the ball. And so, you know, I saw Wayne Ellington, and, you know, you saw Klay Thompson and all those guys, you know, they're putting up shots. They had strides where they really couldn't hit a bucket. They, you know, on one rack, they would go like 1 for 5, couldn't hit the money balls and things like that. But at the time, I was actually at work and I was, you know, watching it on TV, and I saw Devin Booker. You know, Devin Booker played against the Sixers earlier this season, I think a month or two ago, and he just like lit up. I think he had 50 some points. I don't know his exact stats, but they lost that game, yeah. And so, my eye was on Booker. I was like, you know what, let's see what this guy's got. And he just went off, had 28 as a score out of a maximum of 34, which was, an all-time record in the new format.
Yeah, that's record. He beat Steph's record of 27.
Exactly. And he just went off. Like, it was just like, man, just his hands were just pure, like, they were on flames practically. And, you know, he just, I think, separated himself from Klay. I think Klay went like a one, I think he went right after, well, after Devin, he had a score of 25, and you know,
which is still a really good score, and under normal circumstances, you know, wins the whole thing. But Devin Booker was just fire, and I think both of those guys have a quality that not necessarily everybody in the field has, that they can just drown out all the noise. And it's a lot different doing the practice of a three-point contest in your gym as opposed to going out there in front of 20,000 people and then trying to do it with the announcer being like, oh, he made one, he missed one, he made one, he missed one. That would throw me off. But then Klay was able to go there and beat his score and get a 25, and Devin Booker, just incendiary.
Yeah, I think Devin and Klay are the only ones who can actually get into a rhythm. You know, he had Paul George, a great scorer. So far, he's had a pretty good NBA career coming out of Fresno State back in 2010. And he was just throwing up breaks. I mean, I saw a clip on Instagram, I think. I'm not sure who it was by, but they had animated the basketball into a brick. And so he was literally just chucking up bricks in the video. That's what it seemed like. But he was just, I mean, what I think some players don't understand until they get into a three-point contest, and you hear people on TNT, Chuck, Ernie always talk about this, is that there's scorers in the game, and then there's shooters. I think Paul George is a great scorer. I don't think he's a great shooter when it comes to shooting off the rack. I think the same thing he said about Danny Granger. I think he was in a three-point contest back in the 2000s where when he was playing for Indiana, he was a great scorer, not that great of a shooter when it comes to a competition like a three-point contest. So I think Paul George, great scorer. Devin Booker, great scorer. You know, he's a little different, I think. I think Devin Booker has a lot of potential. It's a lot of upside in my perspective on him. And same with Klay Thompson. They're both just deadly snipers pretty much, and that's how they showcased that on Saturday.
Yeah, it reminds me of about a decade ago, maybe even more than that. You remember when Antoine Walker was a star for the Boston
Celtics?
Yeah, for the Boston Celtics.
Denver, Miami.
He was in the three-point contest because he was, like, leading. That year he was leading the league in three-point attempts, but he wasn't necessarily leading in three-point percentage. And his shot was just, it was a chucky shot. And so when he went out there for the three-point contest, it just didn't feel natural. He was just chucking and chucking and chucking. And, of course, he didn't stand a chance.
Exactly. It just goes to show that you think that, you know, these guys are in the gym, they work on that craft, they keep putting up shots. It's repetition after repetition. But then once those lights come on, you know, when they're shooting, they have some sort of music going on to get the crowd more into it. Once those lights come on, it's just like, well, let's see what they got now. So I think that goes on full display every All-Star game year in and year out.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the best shooters went out. I mean, that's the thing. Devin Booker was best this year, and he's a very, very good three-point shooter. And, you know, like you said, the difference between scorers and shooters is very clear when it's time for the three-point contest. But let's move on to the dunk contest. I personally thought that, you know, it wouldn't be a dunk contest without, like, an upset. But I just didn't find the overall contest incredibly impressive. But specifically, I thought that Dennis Smith was robbed a little bit. I thought that Larry Nance had a better tribute than Donovan Mitchell did. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
I think the best way an NBA fan or a spectator or a journalist or whatever the case may be, a lover of the game, can truly say that the dunk contest year in and year out is a hit or a miss. You're not going to get a great dunk contest every single year. I don't think we've had a great dunk contest, and we had that duel, if you will, between Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine, I think 2 years ago. But in regards to who was better this year, I would have to go with, I wanted to see more of Dennis Smith. I did like Larry Nance's creativity, him, you know, representing his dad, wearing the Larry Nance jersey when he was back in 84 with the Phoenix Suns, and he did the cradle or whatnot with the straight legs.
Yeah,
and everything.
Won the very first dunk contest. Very cool.
Exactly. And with Donovan Mitchell, you know, he's just ridiculously athletic, but when it came to his dunks, I don't think it was the creativity was there. I mean, that one dunk he had over Kevin Hart and his siblings, great, right? I mean, he brought out his siblings, he brought out Kevin Hart. I just thought that was a good idea, but I mean,
yeah, that was his best dunk of the night, definitely.
He definitely got up there in terms of his vertical, but I just don't think the creativity was really there. I think creativity is the main component when it comes to a dunk contest. You know, you could be the most athletic person in that contest for that year, but if you don't have any creativity whatsoever, then you're pretty much just, it's pretty much you're like, you're just, what are you doing? You're just going up and trying to jump the highest you can and hit someone down the hardest you can. There needs to be creativity in a dunk contest.
Right, I agree. And you know, the judges seem to like it. The All-Star panel of judges, I thought, was a good move to get some celebrities in there and take, you know, have just one basketball player, two basketball players. Lisa Leslie, I think, was in there, and also Dr.
Right,
Ray,
yep.
Along with the VIPs. You know, I just, like you said, creativity is key. And I don't think recreating an amazing dunk from 20 years ago and not doing it as well as the guy who did it and made it iconic should deserve a 50. I just don't think that was a 50 dunk. And I was a little disappointed in the way the judging went about, you know, went about making the decision. But Donovan Mitchell did entertain, and, you know, he tried his best and got the win. So maybe next year for Dennis Smith Jr. and Larry Nance. I'm so excited for Larry Nance transitioning to the Cleveland Cavaliers. He had a lot of fans in the audience coming from the Los Angeles Lakers a few weeks ago. But you know, I'm looking forward to him in future dunk contests. And now he's on a team that has a chance to make some noise this year. So I'm excited for him.
Yeah, same for me. And I think one talk about the dunk contest here. I think one person we have to see in a dunk contest before he retires. And I think you know where I'm going with this one is the one and only LeBron James. I mean, let's face it, this guy was just, I mean, in the 2000s, he had to be in 2005 and 6 and 7. He was just throwing dunks, you know, in the regular season, during the playoffs against the Pistons back in 07. He was just, against the Celtics, actually, back in 07 and 08. He was just jumping all over the place. And I thought this guy would eventually come to a dunk contest. Looking at him now, reaching the age of, yeah, he turned 33 in December. I don't think he'll be in a dunk contest. I think he has other things he should consider in his career at this moment. But I think as a lover of the game for both of us and fans all over the world, and even here in the U.S., where that's a thing that I think will never happen, but it's a thing we always hope for, but it is what it is. So,
what if they brought him in as a judge? Like, what if he was one of the judges, along with, like, Dr. J? I think that would be ideal, because then you get LeBron, you get the star power, and he's just giving his, you know, harshest criticism of all these dunks. You know, you're talking about one of the best in-game dunkers in the league and one of the most creative dunkers in practice with the stuff that he does off the wall, behind the back, off the backboard, all that stuff. We've seen him do these amazing things. We know what he's capable of, and as a 15-time, 14-time All-Star, all starts, you know, right, he would provide the kind of gravitas to bring the level. You know, the players who play the game, who do the contest, would look at LeBron, and then they'd realize they'd have to step their game up, you know?
Exactly. I just think LeBron has that creativity where he's just, you know, when he's in the lane, you see him coming down, just, you know, it's in your best interest to just get out the way. I think his creativity is just immense. And I think back in, I mean, I watched his performances back in the 09 playoffs against the Magic, and he was just, I think at that time he was 22 years old, right, 22, 23, and he was just, you know, all over the place. Going against Dwight Howard, blowing past him, dunking on him at times. Now I was like, well, this guy needs to be in a dunk contest. Like, he has so much, I mean, what can he do? LeBron has that athletic ability, so give him some creativity, and, like, the sky's the limit, in my opinion.
Yeah, unfortunately, that moment has passed, but maybe we'll get him
in
the judges.
Yep.
And we do have to take a break for our sponsors. Stay tuned. And we're back. We're serving Kumas from Trend Basket, and we're going to get into the Philadelphia 76ers, Sergeant's chosen team, and the home of the process. Let's talk Sixers, man. How are you feeling about this team right now, fighting for a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference?
Well, Lisa, I've been trusting the process since 2006. You know, I've been a fan since fourth grade, so I think I've been trusting the process for a good 11 years now. You know, we're 30-25 right now. We're third in the Atlantic Division, seventh in the Eastern Conference. I mean, starting the season 0-3, you kind of felt that it was going to be like that because you're bringing in the player that has so much potential, but the chemistry still needs to be there. But after that, you know, we're currently on a 5-game winning streak. We won 11 straight at Wells Fargo. I think the process is now kicking in.
I didn't realize you guys were on an 11-game home winning streak.
Like, it just goes to show that me covering games, I can see the fans just getting into it, and I can see why that's happening. New signings like Marco Bellinelli had 17 coming off the bench against Miami. We were down, I think, by 26, if not more, at halftime. I think it was, we only had like 39, 40 points at halftime. And so I'm trusting the process. I think, I don't see why not. I think it's in your face and everything. And there, I mean, we're getting games out on national television. We're on ESPN. We're on TNT. And so I think if you're not trusting the process, then I don't know what you're trusting exactly. So,
right, right. Poor Sam Hinkie maybe never will have a job in the NBA again, but really created something special in Philadelphia. And how about, like, it was 1-8 a few weeks ago, but the 2-7 matchup right now, I really want to see you guys play the Celtics in the playoffs. I think that would be really exciting.
Yeah, so we played them early on this season, played them in London, like I said. And so I think with them, it'll be a great matchup. I just think that when it comes to the Celtics and the Sixers, what I watched the entire game in London at the O2 Arena, and we were up by a lot. Of course, the basketball mind of Brad Stevens prevailed at the end. They came back and won it. But I think if we were to play the Celtics, I think we could possibly beat them. I think we could. I think you could go to six games, maybe 4-2, in my opinion. But I think that'd be a great matchup. You know, the other second seed will be the seventh seed, and I think if the players were to start now, I'd be very confident in the 76ers.
Yeah, me too. You guys are exciting. And let's talk about Ben Simmons, because he's lighting up the stat sheet in every possible way without a jump shot. And I just don't even know how that's possible. Like, you'd think that he would be easier to guard, but the dude is 6'9". He's a bruiser, an Aussie bruiser, with the passing touch of a point guard because, you know, he is a point guard. And I just, when Markelle Fultz comes back to this lineup, it's going to be absolutely stunning. But you then have another guy who maybe is an iffy shooter, but still, the talent on this roster, starting with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, is going to be formidable for the next 5 years at least.
So I think I should consider Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid to be like a new 1-2 punch in the NBA. Similar to that of what John Stockton and Karl Malone had back in the 90s, such an example of what they're doing right now. When Markel does come back into the lineup this season, if not the next and the one after, I'm not sure how it'll play out chemistry-wise. I don't think nobody knows unless you're the coach, which is, you know, with Brett Brown, I think he has a good idea, and people who really follow the Sixers every practice, every home game, and every away game. But for my opinion, going to home games, following the team, I don't know how it'll fit chemistry-wise. If he does come in, I mean, the sky's the limit once again. But I really like what Ben Simmons and Joel's doing right now. I just think, you know, it's a 1-2 punch. There's literally Ben's coming. If he can't go to the basket, he'll dip it off to Embiid. If Embiid can't finish, he'll kick it out to JJ, and then there we go. That's a wide open three. JJ's one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA. I just think, chemistry-wise, the moves we made in the offseason are paying off.
And, you know, not only that, but there's a certain similarity, I think, between the Warriors and the Sixers in terms of what they call the process. The Warriors went through a similar situation. They drafted Stephen Curry in 2009, and Stephen Curry, you know, had ankle problems for 3 years. But the process was, we trust Steph, especially the new ownership. And he worked his ass off to get back right. They drafted well. They drafted Klay Thompson. They drafted Draymond Green. They drafted Harrison Barnes, and then turned it around and got Kevin Durant. And that is the process. And I think that the Sixers are either one Markelle Fultz or one marquee signing away from really just being at the top of the Eastern Conference.
I think so, too. And I actually spoke to Andre Iguodala back in November when the Warriors came over to Philadelphia to play the Sixers. And I asked him, a former Sixer, he was an all-star, an all-defensive team with Philadelphia during his eight-year, got drafted in 04, and played 8 years up until the summer of 2012, he got traded to Denver. I asked him about his opinion on what he thinks of Philadelphia, and he thinks that if they keep pushing, if they make the right move, if they keep staying healthy and consistent, this team could be a lot, you know, similar to what's going on with us. And above and beyond, this team is one of the up-and-coming teams, and they really put the key in, you know, Simmons is great, is good so far, and same with Embiid, but you also got guys Saric, who can really spread the floor along with Redick and Covington, who can shoot the ball as well. And so I think
Robert Covington.
Yeah, he's really come a long way since coming from the D-League back in, I think, 2014, 2015, and, you know, he's been really great for us. But I just think,
what is he like, third in the league in three-pointers made or something like that?
At one point, yeah, in the beginning of the season, he was just killing it. He was shooting great from downtown. Against the Warriors back in November, he started 5-for-5 from beyond the three-point line in that game in the first half. He kind of went cold from there. I'll admit it, as a fan, as a spectator, as a reporter, but he did play well that game in the first half. He's been more consistent. I fear that with the contract extension and with the increase in pay and things of that nature, that is it worth it? Can we rely on him as a shooter? But I mean, he's erased my doubts for the most part.
Yeah, mine too. We do have to transition to our next segment. Let's take a quick break.
Greetings, Dubs fans. The Bay Area is known for innovative businesses, large and small, and innovative businesses innovate in their advertising as well. Podcasts are super hot right now, and Locked On Warriors is no different. So if your company is looking for a connected male audience, the Locked On Warriors podcast is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 and 44. Look no further than Locked On Warriors. Our rates are incredibly reasonable, and you have nothing to lose. So get at me, alicocarter11@gmail.com.
And we're back, and we're going to talk about the Warriors. Because obviously this is Locked On Warriors, and unless you've been sleeping under a rock, number of thoughts about this team, and obviously so do I. But we'll start with just the kind of
up and down play we've seen over the last few weeks. They've fallen to second in the Western Conference and in and overall behind the Houston Rockets. Is there anything to that, Serge? Do you think that the Warriors are starting to show cracks?
You know, I think so in a sense, but not really. I think when if I'm a Warriors fan, and I have been for a long time, I was born and raised in Oakland, I was a fan, I would not be afraid of what's happening to the Warriors now. You know, I know back two seasons ago in the 15-16 season, they only lost 9 games, ended up winning 73, beating the 9-6 Bulls record. But if I'm a Warriors fan now, if I'm a reporter, a spectator, whatever the case may be, I trust the Warriors. I think the Warriors will go to the finals. I have no worries. I think if you have firepower like a Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, bouncing out the entire floor, Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry, I have no worries. And if they do go on a drought, which I think in the Warriors' case is losing like 2 or 3 games in a row, I think that's a drought for the Warriors, right? But
yeah, absolutely.
I think nonetheless, if I'm a Warriors fan, I have faith in the Warriors. I think they, even if they do have that moment where they lost to Portland Trail Blazers before the All-Star weekend, I think I'll never start to doubt them. I think Steve Kerr is that of a Brad Stevens, if not better. I just think his mind works differently. I think he views the game differently, which is why the Warriors are so great. I mean, you had the Warriors 2 or 3 years ago. Even before that, they had potential, but it wasn't really molding out the way the team wanted itself to mold out. But now you're looking at
the Mark Jackson Warriors.
Exactly, Mark Jackson's Warriors. And to me, it's kind of like a phenomenon. I'm like, what happened after Mark Jackson left and Steve Kerr came in? In 2014, and I just think it's been a great, great story where Stephen Curry coming out of Davidson, Klay Thompson, who I heard of actually my freshman year of high school in the summer, I was looking at mock drafts. I'm like, wait, who's this guy from Washington State? You know, who is he? And I watched one of his highlights in the Pac-12 tournament that year, I think against Washington, and he just lit up, I think, for 40-some points, and I was like, okay, he might be pretty good. And, you know, here we are now. 5-6 years later, he's one of the best shooters in the league. So I have
one of the best two-way players at the win. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, you know, I have some thoughts about that. You know, I don't think Mark Jackson was necessarily a bad coach. He definitely uplifted Stephen Curry and like got Steph to trust in his own potential in a way maybe Steve Kerr wouldn't have been able to. And so what I see is Mark Jackson was the right coach for that right period of time to take the team from bad to good and potentially even from good to great. But only Steve Kerr could have taken that nucleus of talent, or not only Steve Kerr, but definitely not Mark Jackson, would have been able to take that nucleus of talent and take them from great to champions. And so I just think it was a series of smart decisions by the Warriors ownership to let a situation go at the exact right time. Don't let it fester or age or do anything like that. And, you know, what we have now is just a series of champions. But one note, the Warriors have only lost 3 games in a row twice in the last 3 seasons, once last year and once back in, I believe, 2013, 2014. It's been a while.
Right.
I did that, yeah. So it's been a period of heavy, heavy rain for the Warriors here in Northern California, even as drought conditions persist in the outside. But, three losses in a row, or losing 4 or 5, 5 or 7, that kind of is what the Warriors are going through right now, and I think the All-Star break couldn't have come at a better time.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just think they need that breather. If, you know, along with other teams in the NBA, the Warriors – being one of the best teams in the NBA, needed that breather, needed that time to just relax, sit back, and enjoy themselves. And I think they'll just get into their groove. I think the Warriors will always find a way to be successful in what they're doing. I just think the system is there. And I think, you know, if we're going up, sorry, above basketball, sorry, I think one team that could compare it to is Barcelona. I'm a huge soccer fan. I think teams, like when looking at the Warriors in basketball and looking at Barcelona in soccer, is that they'll always find a way, no matter what. I just think that even if they're in a drought, if something's going on injuries-wise or anything of that nature, they'll always find a way to go back on top. I think the Warriors have this plan. And I think what the NBA is trying to do now, we look at the preseason moves like the Houston Rockets and the Cleveland Cavaliers, is everyone is trying to beat the Golden State Warriors. Everyone's trying to implement that kind of system into their own, and it's not that easy. You just can't sign players who were once all-stars maybe 5-6 seasons ago, and you're trying to bring them in now, trying to get them back into the group. It just can't happen that way. I mean, whatever the Warriors have for their blueprint, I mean, someone needs to grab a hand of that and take it to their team. That's the only way you're going to do what the Warriors are doing right now, in my opinion.
Hey, it's about having great coaching, good ownership, drafting players who have the potential to become all-stars. I think that the Sixers have the formula. Exactly. But we did already discuss that, and I wanted to touch on a couple of potential playoff scenarios, Warriors versus Thunder and Warriors versus Rockets, because those, I think, are the two biggest threats in the Western Conference to the Warriors, and they might end up duking it out in that second round, or the Warriors could face the Thunder in the second round before the conference finals. What do you think of those matchups? I definitely think both of those teams were exactly what you said, designed to beat the Warriors at their own game. And obviously, the Thunder, a much better defensive team. The Rockets, a much better offensive team. But they both pack a punch, and they've both beaten the Warriors twice this year. So do you see any potential for an upset there? Or is it something that the Warriors will just be able to turn around? And you can chalk it up to it being the dog days of the NBA, lots of turnovers, all that other kind of stuff. They're tired. It's February. May, they'll be ready.
I couldn't agree more with that, what you last said. Come playoff time, they'll be ready to go. I just think when you say OKC, it keeps reminding me back in 2016 when they were down 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals to Oklahoma City and how they came back and won 4-3. It was just, I think if anything would have happened in the playoffs, if they're up against OKC, I think they'll beat OKC. I think OKC, they've been in a better groove than they were back in November and December, but I think playoff time, I think chemistry-wise, it could be an issue with Paul George and Carmelo Anthony. You know, playoff time is when the superstars come to play, and who's going to be the superstar then? I think egos may collide. I don't know them personally. I don't think they ever will. But I think that come playoff time, I think OKC will have trouble. But I think when you compare that to Houston, I think Houston will have a better chance of beating the Warriors with the likelihood of James Harden playing better. If he's not playing, you know, he's playing great now, but I think when playoff time comes, I think, you know, I don't know how good he'll be then. I think he'll be even better than he is now. You have Chris Paul, which has a chip on his shoulder where he hasn't had a ton of success in the NBA in regards to playoffs. And he's, 32, 33 now. And I think he'll have a chip on his shoulder. So I think he'll play in overdrive. Whatever he has left in the tank in the fourth quarter of a game six or game seven, he'll just give everything he's got. But in regards to the likelihood of who beating who, I think that if the Warriors were to match up against the Thunder, I think they'd win it at maybe 4-1, 4-2. For Houston, I want to see if it goes to Game 7. I think that would be a great matchup. And so I think that if Houston plays the Warriors, I think that Houston would have a more likely chance of beating them.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think Houston is definitely a slightly bigger threat than the Thunder. The Thunder have a fire that Houston doesn't have, but Houston, I think, has better coaching and a little bit more at the top of its roster in terms of pushing the envelope. Though, neither James Harden nor Chris Paul is known for being clutch in the playoffs, so they're going to have to prove themselves this year, definitely. But there's a few other things going on around the NBA. Obviously, the Warriors are back to play the Clippers tomorrow night, so we're getting back to NBA basketball. And then a huge story, which I wanted to discuss with you about the Dallas Mavericks, and the Me Too movement has come and touched the NBA in a way it never has before. I read a story on Sports Illustrated about the president of the Mavericks, and read Mark Cuban's apologies, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on what that says about the NBA. Is there a wider story here? Is it just relegated to the Mavericks, or what do you think?
I mean, I just think in regards to allegations by Mark Cuban and that, there was alleged inappropriate behavior and things of that nature. I just think that in regards of how the NBA is being viewed on a social media standpoint, I think that stories can be blown up to be out of proportion. So one thing can happen and lead to another that never really happened, because I think social media just takes things on one spectrum and gives it a totally different perspective to the fans. And so I think what the Mavericks did, I don't really have an official opinion on it, what they did. I'm not sure if it was right or wrong when it comes to misconduct allegations, what Mark Cuban did and the president of that situation, but I don't think it's as bad as it seems. I just think that, when you're looking at sports as a whole on social media and, constant coverage on ESPN, SportsCenter, whatever media it might be, I just think that gets blown out of proportion, in my opinion. What's your take on it, and what do you think about that?
Well, my take is that Mark Cuban has always handled himself as an incredibly knowledgeable, passionate, and
I would say fiery, kind of. Right.
Yeah. He loves his team. He loves his staff. He loves his organization. And so I definitely think that whatever he said, he feels. You know, that he did not want this to go down on his watch. And, you know, whatever did happen, just a series of allegations by different women against this one person. And, you know, he's taking steps to rectify it. And, you know, I'm sure Adam Silver will continue to take steps to rectify it and make sure that this kind of situation isn't present in any other teams. And, I've been around the Warriors for years now. And
right.
It's a tip-top organization from top to bottom as far as equality, racial equality, gender equality, people being comfortable in the workplace. You know, there's they're actually the first team to hire a female athletic trainer. And she is the nicest and just seems to really love her job. So hopefully – that isn't the case for the Warriors or the Sixers. We do want to, you know, cherish our organizations and not, you know, have them, you know, represented poorly.
Right.
But when's the Sixers' next game?
Oh, they're playing this. They're actually playing at Chicago. At Chicago, I think tomorrow night at I think at 7:30 or 8. I wish it was an easy way. Chicago did get into that stretch where they were playing great. And we did lose to Chicago, I believe, a month or so ago. We did lose to them down the stretch. The game went down the wire. Sixers in that moment were in a tough stretch anyway. They were on the road in the previous two games as well. So they were kind of in a tough stretch at that time. But I think winning five in a row, being 30-25, going into the Bulls, going into Chicago, I think that would be an easy win for us. And we're back at home this Saturday playing the Magic, and I'll be in attendance for that game. I just think that, you know, according to BPI, the Warriors, and, you know, your Warriors, my Sixers have the easiest schedules going from here on out. So I just hope that Sixers make that final push in the next 2 or 3 months. And, you know, hopefully when playoff time comes, we'll be ready.
Do you see yourself making a push for a higher playoff seed?
I do and I don't. So I know the Milwaukee Bucks right now, I believe they're 32-25. They're the 10th best record in the NBA right now. So I think that the Bucks have played okay. I know Jabari came back, and he's, you know, I'm not sure how well he's doing with the Bucks chemistry-wise, but I do believe that at most, or at best, the Sixers could be a sixth seed. I think, and if we have any questions or wondering, or the, you know, the fans wondering, what do I think of the record would be, I think I'm hoping for a record of for maybe like 42-40, if you will, or maybe if not better. You know, I think we'll finish the season maybe 3 or 4 games above 500. I just think that's a realistic approach to it. That's just the way I view the Sixers right now. So,
yeah, you sound like me from a few years ago, man. I remember when the Warriors were, you know, were bad, and then Jackson promised the playoffs, and we instead shut down Stephen Curry and traded away Monte Ellis. But the next season, we were a 6 seed. The season after that, we were a 6 seed, and then the season after that, we won the championship. And the Warriors were 28-1 to win the championship that year in 2015. So there are stranger things that have happened, and I definitely see a bright future for the Sixers. I want to thank you, Serge, for joining us. Sergen Kumas, a writer, staff writer for Trend Basket, and a huge fan and follower of the Philadelphia 76ers. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
All right, Hoopsheads, stay thoughtful.